Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 26, Fundamental Principles of Material Nature. Text number 25. Sahasasira samsakshat yam anantam prachakshate sankashanakhyam purusham putendriya manomayam sahasrasirasam sakshat yam anantam prachakshate sankashanakhyam purusham bhutendriya manomayam sahasrasirasam sakshat prachakshate sankashanakyam purusham bhutendriya manomayam sahasrasirasham with a thousand heads sakshat directly yam, whom, anantam, ananta, prachakshate, they call, sankashana akyam, sankashan by name, purusham, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, bhuta, the gross elements, indriya, the senses, manamayam, consisting of the mind. The threefold ahankara, the source of the gross elements, the senses, and the mind is identical with them because it is their cause. It is known by the name of Sankarshan, who is directly Lord Ananta with a thousand heads. Text 26. Katritvam karanatvam cha karyatvam chitti lakshanam shanta ghora vimudhatvam iti vasyad ahankritahe. This false ego is characterized as the doer, as an instrument, and as an effect. It is further characterized as serene, active, or dull, according to how it is influenced by the modes of goodness, passion, and ignorance. Purport, ahankara, or false ego, is transformed into the demigods, the controlling directors of material affairs. As an instrument, the false ego is represented as different senses and sense organs, and as the result of the combination of the demigods and the senses, material objects are produced. In the material world, we are producing so many things, and this is called advancement of civilization. But factually, the advancement of civilization is a manifestation of the false ego. By false ego, all material things are produced as objects of enjoyment. One has to cease increasing artificial necessities in the form of material objects. One great acharya, Narottam Das Thakur, has lamented that when one deviates from pure consciousness of Vasudev or Krishna consciousness, he becomes entangled in material activities. The exact words he uses are satsanga, chadi kayanu, asate vilas, te karane lagili lagila ye karma banda phansa. I have given up the pure status of consciousness because I wanted to enjoy in the temporary material manifestation. Therefore, I have been entangled in the network of actions and reactions. Om Gana Timirandasya Gananjana Salakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Jena Tasmaye Sri Guruve Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kada Mahayam Tisva padantikam mukam karoti vachalam pangunam gayate girim yat kripa tamaham bande shri gurum dinatarinam. First verse here, the ahankara is the source of, it's the source of our identification with the material energy. The source of the gross elements, the senses and the mind. It is known by the name of Sankarshar, who is directly Lord Ananta with a thousand heads. Where does Lord Sankarshan with a thousand heads reside? Anybody know? Sorry? In the causal ocean. Is Mahavishnu known as Sankarshan? I don't think so. No, that's not what I'm thinking. Where's Lord Sankarshan? Sashirasham. With a thousand heads. Where does he reside? Where's he worshipped? Anybody know? He's worshipped by the Lord Shiva. Is he? Okay. Where's Lord Sankarshan worshipped? Who worships him? Lord Brahma. Right? Lord Brahma worships Shankarshan in Brahmaloka. It's described in the Brihat Bhagavatamrita. The Lord with 1,000 heads, Sahasrasirasham. So, he's the source, ultimately the Lord is the source of everything. But here it's described that the Lord, the source of the material elements and the source of this ahankara is Lord Shankarshan. And when the living entity misidentifies, instead of being situated in their pure state of Krishna consciousness, wherein one identifies as a servant of Krishna, a servant of the Lord, and is free from the influence of the material energy. That's our original Satchit Ananda state of consciousness, wherein one understands one's relationship as a servant. Jivera Swarupa Hoy Nityera Krishna Das. That's our original constitutional position, is as a servant of the Lord. But when one turns away from that original Krishna consciousness and seeks to enjoy and to act independently from the Lord, then in that state of, in that turning away, one then becomes influenced by this ahankara, this false identification with the material body. It's that which binds us to the material energy and is a consequence of our forgetting our relationship with Krishna and trying to act independently. So it's interesting here. Prabhupada says the ahankara or false ego is transformed into the demigods, the controlling directors of material affairs, because we think we're doing things. The ahankara makes us feel that we're the doers, but actually it's described in the Bhagavatam, it's described, and in the Vedas it's described that even the facilities that we have, even though we appear to be the controllers, actually the controllers of all of the material affairs within the creation is done by the demigods. The controlling directors of material affairs. So there are the demigods are deputed, deputed. They're the agents, ultimately, of the Lord. And they facilitate all of these interactions. We appear to be the doers, or we feel like we're the doers, but ultimately that's all being orchestrated by the administrators of material affairs, which is the demigods. So Prabhupada makes this point here. The ahankara, or false ego, is transformed into the demigods, the controlling directors of material affairs. So each of the movements and actions of the body are all controlled. The blinking of the eyelids, the movement of the hands, and all of these are ultimately facilitated by these administrators. As an instrument, the false ego is represented as different senses and sense organs. So, Prabhupada In the verse it says this false ego is characterized as the doer. So the first thing that Prabhupada says here is and the doer is ultimately the demigods, they're the administrators. Then he says, as an instrument, that's the second item. So this, the false ego is characterized by three things. The first one is the demigods, they're the doers. Something to meditate on. That's not how we see things. But here's a description of what's actually going on. As an instrument, the false ego is represented as different senses and sense organs. What are the senses?
Taste, touch, smell.
And what are the sense organs? So we have touch. That's the manifest in the skin. Right? And we have what comes next? Touch. Touch, smell, right? The nose, sight, the eyes, taste, the tongue, and hearing, the ears. Right? So these are the instruments. Right? That carry us around. We have the Gyanendriya, and we also have the Karmendriya. Right? We've got the knowledge acquiring senses, and we've got the working senses, the hands, the legs, the various features of the body that allow us to move around, the genitals, the voice, the evacuation, the organs of evacuation. Huh? So these are the senses. Huh? And as a result of the combination of the demigods and the senses, material objects are produced. The demigods create all of the facility, and we're carried around within that facility by the senses and other material objects. Right? The combination of the demigods, they're the doer, and then the instruments, the senses, Karmendriya, Gyanendriya, etc. This all combined together produces this material world. The Prabhupada says, in the material world, we are producing so many things. And this is called advancement of civilization. But factually, the advancement of civilization is a manifestation of the false ego, and so therefore is what? False. Right? We think to build roads, to have skyscraper buildings, to have aeroplanes, to have communications systems, all of the activities of advancement of civilization, we see that as being progress, but actually it's the working of the false ego. And so as a consequence of our identification with that, all of those activities, we get caught up and our consciousness becomes absorbed in all of these external activities, and we think that's progress. And as a consequence of that, we forget our actual identity. Factually, the advancement of civilization is a manifestation of the false ego. And so, you know, it comes into being, it maintains for some time, and then at the end, it is destroyed and fades away. But while we're engrossed in all of those activities, we think of it as being permanent and meaningful and the source of our pleasure, and the purpose of existence is to pursue material advancement. By false ego, all material things are produced as objects of enjoyment. But Prabhupada says here, one has to cease increasing artificial necessities in the form of material objects. In our culture, the accumulation of material objects, increasing the amount of possessions that we have, is considered to be a form of advancement. Right? It's considered to be advancement. The more you've got, there used to be that bumper sticker on people's cars that says, "The person who dies with the most toys is the winner." Right? But Vedic culture is not like that. Vedic culture is values renunciation. Right? Because we know you can accumulate as, and there are many people, many examples of people who are fabulously wealthy but utterly miserable. Right? Utterly miserable, and they kill themselves out of frustration. You know, the heir to the Gillette fortune, the daughter of Mr. Gillette, she was fabulously wealthy, but totally miserable, and so she killed herself. Right? So, we know, at least theoretically we know, that the accumulation of wealth doesn't bring with it happiness or satisfaction. And in a Vedic culture, with that awareness, the measurement of advancement is the cultivation of knowledge. And with the cultivation of knowledge comes the cultivation or the development of character. Vidya, Vinaya, Sampane. So along with learning and knowledge comes symptoms of humility, appreciation and acknowledgement and respect for others, being concerned about the suffering of others, wanting to assist, first of all, freeing oneself from this, the ignorance or the illusion of that this body is the self, and then helping others get free from that illusion of the that's created by the false ego that we are the body, but rather, and so therefore advancement in Vedic culture is to develop knowledge. Knowledge meaning that one understands that one is not the body, that one is spiritual by nature, and that one is a servant of God or a servant of Krishna, as opposed to an enjoyer and a controller of the material energy, that one knows how to use the material energy because one knows to whom it belongs. Isavasyam midam sarvam, you know, the beginning of the Isopanishad has these very basic instructions. Everything is complete. The only thing that's incomplete is our Krishna consciousness. But when we are Krishna conscious, then we understand that ultimately everything belongs to the Lord. And that he allows us, he gives us facility. Ultimately it belongs to him, but he gives it to us. He gives us our quota. And then we are to use that quota as if it belongs to us. But we are subordinate owners and controllers, if you like. We own it and control it, but on his behalf. You know, when Prabhupada came to Melbourne, and the reporters were saying, you know, why is it that you're worshipped like God? Why do they worship you as if you're God? You know, why do people bow down? And Prabhupada made the point. He said, you know, I'm not God. I'm the representative of God. I'm like the tax man who collects tribute on behalf of the king. And so, Prabhupada said, the obeisances or the bowing down is not meant for me, it is meant for God. But I collect it on God's behalf. Right? So the proper symptom of learning, the symptom of knowledge, is to understand, first and foremost, that everything belongs to God, including myself. And that actually I'm not a product of this material energy, but rather the material energy is providing this facility so I can make progress in my spiritual life and I can help others make progress in theirs. So detachment and this proper understanding of proprietorship, and along with that comes renunciation. And renunciation means using everything appropriately in the service of the Lord. And the wonderful thing in the Bhagavatam it describes, in this canto, Kapiladeva describes how when we use everything in the mood of false ego, then it entangles us. Right? And that's mentioned here. Prabhupada quotes Narottam Das Thakur, when I give up my pure identification as a servant of Krishna and I want to enjoy the material energy, then what happens? I become entangled in the actions and reactions of the material energy. But those same activities, not that we have to give up action, because we can't. We're forced to act. We can't not act. Not acting means dead. Right? When there's no action in the material body, what does that mean? The soul is gone. Right? So the nature of the soul is to be active. We can't not be active. But that activity, when it's underpinned by this learning and understanding and detachment, right? And that, you know, the epitome of detachment we find in devotees like Raghunath Das, who so absorbed on a spiritual platform that he only needed to have 6 drops of buttermilk, or you know, a very small amount, and even that only every second day. Right? So absorbed on the spiritual platform, nourished by his connection with his spiritual identity, that he didn't need to eat, didn't need to sleep. Right? That's the depth and the degree of his absorption in spiritual consciousness, meant he could be completely detached from the workings of the material energy and be nourished by his spiritual, by the spiritual potency. Right? That is extraordinary, right? So, he's an exemplar of detachment based on spiritual realization, spiritual absorption. So, not to be imitated, mind you. You know, our goal is not to only eat 6 drops of buttermilk every second day. Right? We may come to that platform at some point in future lives, perhaps. Right? But Krishna mentions in the Bhagavad Gita, what is it, yukta hara viharasya, yukta svapna vabodasya, yukta kam, yukta chaita sakamasu, yogo bhavati tukaha. I think I've got lines mixed up a little bit. But anyway, the principle is there. By engaging, by a balanced amount of eating, by a balanced amount of sleeping, by balanced recreation and work, by balanced wakefulness and alertness and a balanced resting, sleeping, by these balanced activities engaged in service to Krishna, what is called devotional service, is a powerful activity. And Kapila Dev says it dissolves the false ego without imperceptibly. The engagement in devotional practice. So he and Prabhupada's quoting Narottam Das Thakur, when we act as the proprietor and we try to enjoy the material energy, then we get entangled in the reactions. But we can do the same activities, practically speaking, but with the purpose of serving Krishna, but with the understanding that ultimately everything is being provided by the Lord and it belongs to Him. And okay, I'm given a, I have my clothes, I have my watch, I have my residence, I have my place of rest, I have my vehicle and so forth. All of those things ultimately are being provided by Krishna. When I change that mentality from trying to enjoy those things for my own satisfaction and pleasure, and I engage those things and use them for Krishna's pleasure, then the opposite happens. Instead of becoming entangled, one becomes purified. And that purification is imperceptible. But Kapila Dev mentions, just like when you have your breakfast in the morning and you go about your daily activities, you don't think about digesting your breakfast. Right? Unless you're sick. Right? Or you ate too much. This is why we recommend it, just balanced. Then you go about your daily activities and then automatically, imperceptibly, breakfast gets digested. You don't have to worry about it. So similarly also, engagement in the regulated principles of devotional service will imperceptibly purify us. We don't have to endeavour separately for purification. It automatically happens as a consequence of our engagement in devotional service. And so that's why we recommend it, have a balanced lifestyle. Balanced sadhana, balanced service, balanced eating. Don't eat too much. Don't eat too little. If you eat too little, what happens? Huh? Get sick. Or what usually happens if you don't eat enough? Yeah, you get hungry. Right? Get hungry. Ooh, I've got to eat. Right? Eat too much, what happens? Right? Go to sleep. So that's why it's eat too much, go to sleep, dream too much, right? And get bewildered by the material energy. Eat too little, and again, bewildered by the material energy. Oh, I've got to have something to eat. Or, you know, you become grumpy and intolerant. So Prabhupada mentions here, by false ego, all material things are produced as objects of enjoyment. Right? But by a proper understanding of Krishna consciousness, and what's that? What's that understanding? Aham Brahmasmi. I'm not, I'm Brahman. not this material energy. And that's the feature of ahankara. Ahankara means I think I'm this body. But when we read the Bhagavad Gita, and it's interesting because we have a dilemma in that, we were discussing this the other day, we have a dilemma in that we know we're not the body, but we also know that we are the body. Well, you try to not be the body. Okay, I'm not the body, I won't eat. Well, and so what will happen? The false ego will come back and bite you because you won't. So this is why this balance is required. Because if we artificially try to act on the spiritual platform without the deep spiritual realization and understanding, then we won't actually escape the grip of the material energy. And so the process of devotional service is one of moderation, not one of total fanaticism. It's balanced. It's a mode of goodness. Even Kapila Dev mentions devotional service can be tinged, if you like. Devotional service itself is pure, but when the motivations are conditioned by the modes of material nature, then its effect won't be as it will purify, and there's benefits, but we still won't be totally freed. It takes time, and so therefore one is required to approach the process of devotional service in a balanced way, so that gradually it can have its effect, gradually purifies. So throughout, devotional service is a practice that goes on throughout our whole lives, and we apply it gradually. Even Krishna mentions in the 6th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, shanai shanai uparamet, gradually, gradually. One becomes purified, especially through the engagement in sadhana bhakti. So, by false ego, all material things are produced as objects of enjoyment. By an understanding of, by a proper spiritual understanding, we see things as ultimately for Krishna's enjoyment. Right? That's the balance, or that's the alternative, that's the opposite. When we see things, and Prabhupada says here, when we see things from the point of view of our own enjoyment, then we become entangled. But when we see things from the point of view that this it belongs to Krishna, idam Krishnaya, idam namama. If I see things as belonging to Krishna and I use them for his pleasure and not for my pleasure, then that consciousness gradually purifies us. And of course it takes time to develop that consciousness. Or shall we say, we can have a theoretical understanding, we can have a practical understanding, but because we're in the material world and we're tatastha shakti, right, we're marginal potency, on occasion we can be under the influence of the spiritual energy and be more Krishna conscious, but on some occasions also, we shouldn't be surprised, that we'll be less Krishna conscious and so a little bit affected by the material energy because we're tatastha shakti. But the more we concentrate on our regulated practice of devotional service, the more the devotional activities will purify us. And so we'll have a positive engagement. We can't not be engaged. You know, Arjuna's idea was, let me just renounce and retire, go to the forest. But Krishna says, what will repression accomplish? You will force to act as a consequence or as a result of the modes of material nature that we've acquired. And so that's why we all do the things that we do and the way that we do them. And each one of us is unique in that regard from the conditional point of view. But we can again be engaged in our constitutional position, in constitutional activities. Those constitutional activities means activities of the spirit soul. We have conditional activities, and so therefore we need to sleep, we need to eat, we need to maintain the body. But we do that to the degree to which our devotional service requires that maintenance. Theoretically, that's what we should do. And we struggle with getting a balance of these things. But the sadhana process, the devotional practices that we're encouraged, that we're recommended to, Rupa Goswami's given us the 64 items of devotional service. And Prabhupada's also given us the Upadeshamrita, the nectar of instruction, where we're basically given a template of activities. And when we engage in all of those activities, what we call devotional service, and when that devotional service is done anyabhilashita shunya, free from material desires for profit and learning, distinction, fame, all of these things that come about as a consequence of material motivations, material desires. But if we do those our devotional activities pleasing to Krishna, free from material motivations, then gradually the process of devotional service will purify. And so we'll less and less identify with the material body and more identify with our spiritual identity. And that identity will, the false ego, as Kapila Dev says, the false ego, ahankara, will be dissolved imperceptibly. And you know, we feel it, you know, when you're in kirtan or when we're chanting japa or even sometimes just walking around doing our service, we realize I'm not the body. And we experience that detachment from things material. And we feel happy. Well, happy. This is a natural consequence of Krishna consciousness, is that we'll be happy. Because that's what we are, ananda. We're satchit ananda by nature. Only that satchit ananda nature is covered over by this false ego. Huh? But as we perform devotional service, the false ego will be dissolved, and then automatically we'll be free from material desires and we'll be happy. Anybody feel happy? Occasionally? Huh? Always. For he's a jolly good fellow. Huh? So that's a measurement. The measurement of a devotee's advancement is happy. And like Krishna, he doesn't see he sees the good. Sees the good in the devotees. Doesn't see the bad, right? Adosha darshi. Krishna doesn't see the bad. This is the nature of, this is what spiritual advancement's all about. It's not that he's foolish and can't see what's going on in the material world. Right? Dukkha dosha anadarshanam. He understands birth, death, old age and disease. Right? This is not a pretty place to be in. Right? But because he's making spiritual progress, he's happy and naturally spontaneous in serving the Lord and serving the devotees. He looks for the positive. Looks for the positive. Doesn't dwell on the negative. So the devotees are likened to bumblebees. Right? The devotees are like bumblebees. They always go for the nectar. And the flies, what are they like? Yeah, they go. They always looking for the place of that which is refused, the refuse, right? The refuse. That. So, the mood of a devotee is seeing the internal spiritual activities of the soul and not dwelling too much on the external material activities, which are always going to be full of faults anyway. We know that. The material world is a place of faults, isn't it? Huh? Always faulty. Even when you get a brand new, you get a brand new phone or whatever, and there's always something wrong with it. Huh? Because it's promised, the perfection of life is to get an iPhone 7. Right? And when you get your iPhone 7, then you'll be happy. But we know that's false. We know actually that's false. We experience it. The material world is dressed up as being something that it's not. That's called Maya. Right? Maya means that which is not. But when we connect to our spiritual identity, and when we engage in devotional service with the right mood, with the right mentality, then the material is dissolved automatically, and one's eternal spiritual identity is naturally uncovered. One will naturally think of Krishna. We actually don't have to force Krishna consciousness onto ourselves. This is what Prabhupada says. It's not an artificial imposition, because it's who we are. So the art of Krishna consciousness is to engage in devotional service and allow the process of devotional service to purify us, which it will do naturally. And there's no point in trying to force it, because it can't be forced, actually. It comes by the grace of God. Mercy, kripa. Right? And we get that grace by associating with Krishna's representatives, the devotees. Right? That's how we get it. And what do we do when we associate with the devotees? What do we do? When we associate with the devotees, what happens? Huh? Kirtan. Yeah. What, are you saying something? Talk about Krishna, yeah. Chant Hare Krishna. Get up in the morning, go to Mangalarti, chant your rounds, worship the deity. The deity. Huh? The deity. The deities. People ask, what's a deity? Oh, it's a deity. Oh, a deity, okay. Yeah, so, all of these activities that we perform, that's what purifies us. Service, sadhana, actually, they go together. It's not something that can be forced. Sometimes the devotees think, oh, I'll chant 32 rounds, or I'll chant 64 rounds. And they're kidding themselves. Huh? How many of us can sit still for that long and actually effectively chant? Prabhupada knew that. And so therefore he didn't recommend, don't chant anymore, that's enough. If you can chant 16 rounds, that's fantastic. Then go and do something for Krishna. That's our program. That's our process. Be actively engaged in devotional service. And don't make a show of devotion. Prabhupada knew. Practical engagement in devotional service, not show bottles. Right? So that, when we ask the devotee to do something, oh, I can't do that. If we're chanting properly and we're being purified, then we'll be enthusiastic to do things, even if they're difficult. Right? Even if they're difficult. Look, the amazing thing was how much Prabhupada's disciples and his followers now are prepared to give up just to do devotional service. It's amazing. And they're happy. Sleep on the floor. Papa gave the example. My disciples could be living in opulence, but they choose to come with me and just sleep on the floor. Huh? How many of you are sleeping on the floor? You sleeping on the floor? Taravali, you sleeping on the floor? Huh? Yeah? You sleep on the floor? No. We don't have to sleep on the floor. We don't have to. Krishna's kind enough to give us a little bit more comfort. But we should still be enthusiastic to engage in devotional service. Huh? Because that's, you know, happy, balanced, satisfied, and then another, you know, a measure of our devotional advancement is how much we actually want to do things for Krishna. Advancement is actually not very difficult to measure in devotional practice in ISKCON. It's not very complicated at all. People like to make out sometimes that it's a bit more highfalutin, but actually it's not. It's quite straightforward. So, you know, in Mayapur, when the devotees told Prabhupada, oh, look, there's so-and-so, I forgot what the name of the devotee was, he's chanting 64 rounds a day. Prabhupada just wasn't very, interested. Huh? Why was that? Why wasn't Prabhupada interested? Did Prabhupada say, oh, that's very good. Oh, is he? Prabhupada just ignored it. Why did Prabhupada do that? Huh? Wasn't practical, and what else? Why wasn't Prabhupada impressed?
The concentration was not constant.
The what?
The concentration.
Yeah, he knew that it wasn't going to last. So after a few weeks, he was gone. Left devotional service altogether. Went back to Maya. The Prabhupada wasn't impressed. Oh, he's showing 64 rounds. Oh, wonderful. No, he knew this is not going to last. Just a show bottle. You know what a show bottle is? What's a show bottle? Huh? What's a show bottle? I haven't got my hearing aid in, so you'll have to speak loudly.
A pretender.
Yes, show bottle. In the chemist shop, at least when I was a boy, most chemist shops had some bottles in the windows. You know, because a chemist mixes chemicals and makes medicine, right? So he's got the bottles in the window to show that he's a chemist and he can make medicine and cure you. And the different coloured bottles indicated all of the different chemicals that he could mix together. But if you took the water out of those bottles and mixed it together to try and make something that would cure you of anything, it wouldn't work. Right? Because it was just coloured water. It wasn't the real thing. So that's what a show bottle is. It's not the real thing. It's a pretender. So we can measure devotional service. We can measure our advancement. And one of them is advancement means freedom from this ahankara. And that's manifest in that the devotee is happy and free from material desires. If we engage in the regulated practice of devotional service, then we can experience the higher taste, basically. Param drishtva nivartate. We're embodied. Vishaya vinivartante niraharasya dehina. By experiencing the higher taste in devotional practice, then automatically the lower taste will reside. That's not the right word, is it? Will be diminished. Of course, you know, we shouldn't be surprised that it'll come back again. It'll be a struggle. Right? So Rupa Goswami says, tolerate, right? Vacho vegam, manasakroda vegam, jiva vegam, udurapasta vegam, etan vegam, yo vishaheta dira. One has to be tolerant, a sober person. So that's one part of the equation. Resist the material pushings, right? But we have to act. So therefore engage in practical activities of devotional service so that our propensities to enjoy will be engaged in Krishna service, basically. We have to, there'll be the pushing to go towards the material side. We have to resist that, but then take up the positive engagement of devotional service. Huh? Not an artificial renunciation, but a natural renunciation. But by doing that, one will get the higher taste out of devotional practice. And one could then control the lower self by the higher self. That's the idea. Yeah, so Prabhupada said one has to cease increasing artificial necessities in the form of material objects, right? And material desires, and we do that by practical engagement in devotional service. Chanting 16 rounds, following the regulated principles, getting up early in the morning, chanting Hare Krishna. So, you know, Prabhupada has actually given us such a wonderful opportunity to make spiritual advancement very easily by this simple process. Huh? And of course we lament. When we're not fully engaged in devotional service, then we lament, like Narottam Das Thakur. I have given up the pure status of Krishna consciousness because I want to enjoy the temporary material manifestation. Huh? Anybody experience that? Occasionally? I'm sure you don't do that, so. Therefore, I've been entangled in the network of actions and reactions. But, you know, if we stick to our sadhana, then how do we feel? How do you feel? Happy. Yeah, we're happy. We were, well, you didn't, but we were hippies, but we're now happies. Huh? You were always happy. You were always happy, Taravella? Eh? What happened to your tooth? Huh? She's losing her babyish looks. She's now growing up. Huh? Going to be very beautiful when you grow up. You'll be very pretty when your teeth grow back. But already looking beautiful. Why? Because she's a devotee. And she's also naturally beautiful. Huh? Even when we're not so beautiful, we still look beautiful because we're happy. Huh? The external features are not as important as the internal features. Right? And so, you know, you feel it. You walk around and you just smile at people. They see the devotees, and the devotees are always smiling, and so they think, oh, these people are really nice. Right? Yeah. The Hare Krishnas are really nice people because they're always happy. And people can see that. They can, it's, I mean, what's he smiling at me for? Because he's happy. He's naturally happy. Now, mind you, that it's not that we're always walking around in a big smoke, because also you see pictures of Prabhupada very, very serious. Right? You know, there's that picture on the back of the Krishna book. And one of the devotees said to Prabhupada, he says, Prabhupada, you're looking very serious there. And Prabhupada said, oh no, I was experiencing great ecstasy at that point in time. Right? So happy, but also serious, because, you know, there are 26 qualities of a devotee. And, you know, happiness is one of them, but also grave, right? Is another quality, because a devotee sees the sufferings of others, sees the faults in material existence, in material life, and wants to free others from that struggle. So on the one hand, yes, happy, free from anxiety, right? That's a Vaikuntha mood, but also experiencing anxiety, right? And this comes from Krishna, actually. Krishna is blissful, but he's also concerned about the welfare of others, Right? This is the nature of a devotee in that, and any person in that, we are a combination of emotions, right? We're not just all one. It's a blend, a mix of feelings and emotions, and that comes also from knowledge. Right? We're not all just a one track. Or one trick pony. We're all multifaceted, and we have multi sets of relationships, right? And we learn how to work in those different relationships. So when we're with the devotees, we're chanting Hare Krishna, we're very happy. But at the same time, we can also be deeply, gravely concerned about the plight of others and want to help them as well. And so therefore be very serious about what we do. It's not like, oh, I'm happy and it's all, la-da-da-da-da, it's all okay. Because it's not all okay in the material world. Right? And we have to be serious. We're also serious about what we do. We take care of the details. We're aware of the details and we take care of them, for example. We're careful when we drive Krishna's cars. We keep an eye open for the people coming in the opposite direction. Ideally. I have also totaled some of Krishna's cars also. Mind you. At the age of 20, 6 or 27. So, I've had practical experience of these things. But ideally, and it was passion. That was the mode of passion. Or, more often, perhaps, the mode of ignorance. So, devotional service does, in order to get free from the ahankara, it's not a stroll in the park. It requires a great deal of seriousness and attention to detail. And that's what sadhana bhakti is about, is attention to detail. When we serve, and deity worship is a good example of that. It's not a slapdash, casual affair. But it requires attention to detail, right? To be effective. To change that consciousness, to change the consciousness, requires attention to detail, and constant. What is it? Satatam kirtayanto mam yatantascha dridabrataha, right? Strong determination with vows. Dridha, brataha. Brata means a vow, and dridha means strong, right? Dridha. Dritti. Is that right? What's dridha mean?
Perseverant.
Determined. Utsahan nischayat dharyat. Enthusiastic, determined, patience. So, yes, we need to, in order for the process to be automatic, as I mentioned before, right, it will be automatic so long as we stick to the process and are attentive to the details, right? We can't be slack and inattentive, and then expect it to work. Right? Oh, Prabhupada says it's automatic. Right? Yeah, it is automatic, but you've still got to do it. Right? You can't expect to get the result and from a poor attendance. Right? It's like, you see sometimes the students before exams, they come and pray Radha Balama and stick a few dollars in the donation box. Right? But, that's not going to help them if they didn't do the study. Right? If they didn't go to the lessons, they didn't read the books and they didn't do the assignments, they could shove $1 million in the undi and they still won't get good marks. Right? So it requires effort. Devotional service does require constant effort, constant application. And then automatically the ahankara will be dissolved. And you know, it's mentioned that the Goswamis, Rupa Goswami, Krishnadas Kaviraj, I think, mentions about Rupa, or possibly Sanatana, I can't remember which one, or maybe even Raghunath Das, that their sadhana was like the lines in a rock. Right? You know, in a piece of granite, you'll see, or we can see the lines in the marble here. Right? There's a piece of marble with some lines in it. Right? So what does that mean? Their sadhana was like the lines in a rock. What does that mean? Yeah, they didn't deviate. They didn't deviate. They stuck to it. And you know, we've got whimsical minds and uncontrollable senses. Right? So it's a struggle just to do the basics sometimes. Struggle to get up in the morning. Interesting, I was talking about this the other day. I read an article, or I've been looking at an article, and it's a number of things, I can't remember what the number is, to do before 8 a.m. every day. Mm-hmm. The first, you know what the first one is that this fellow recommends? What do you think the first one is? Huh? He recommends meditation and prayer. He recommends meditation and prayer, but that's not the first one. What do you think is, what makes a successful morning program to begin with? Huh? Chanting. No, that's not it. That does make a success, but prior to beginning the morning program, what does he say? Or no, what makes a successful morning program to begin with? You don't do it in the morning. You do it the night before. What is it? Go to bed early. So the first thing this fellow recommends is go to bed 7 hours before you want to get up. Huh? Sound familiar? Huh? One of the problems with the Hare Krishnas is, and I'm probably one of the leading culprits, is not going to bed early. Right? Oh, I can do another thing. 10 o'clock at night. Oh yeah, let's start a new project, shall we? 10 o'clock at night. No, this fellow recommends. Go to bed early. But then rise early. He says rise early. And he says, add meditation and prayer to your morning program. Interesting what this... Oh, you know what he recommends? When you get up, first thing, you know what he recommends in his list? A cold shower. A cold shower. Right? How does that sound? Like that idea? No? Well, cold showers are good for health. They stimulate the nervous system. Right? They wake you up. Cold showers wake you up. When I was in Vrindavan, I was just having cold showers. Of course, it was warmer. But and you have to be careful in Melbourne, because even in the summertime, if you just have the cold water straight out of the shower, oh, it's like, it's terrible. Very cold. So you can have it not hot, shall we say. Room temperature. Right? Let's not go for freezing cold, cause pneumonia. Pushpanjali and I went to Tasmania to sell candles in 1979. We were away for 6 weeks, and we weren't prepared to put 10 cents in the heater in the caravan park that we were in so that we could have a warm shower. But in the end, when we came back, he had pneumonia, and he spent 3 weeks in his sleeping bag after we got back because he was so ill from having freezing. And you know, if the water is cold in Melbourne, in Hobart, you guarantee it's a lot colder. Huh? So anyway, but it's interesting. Cold showers, not hot showers. So you can have it room temperature, and it's invigorating. Good for your health, and keeps you awake. So it's interesting. It's interesting that, and he says, read a good book. Read a book that will stimulate your thinking, right? And that's what we do. We read the Srimad Bhagavatam. Right? We get up early in the morning. We have cold showers. Well, maybe we don't have cold showers, but it's worth entertaining. So even the the self-improvement gurus are echoing what Prabhupada taught us, what the Vedas ultimately teach us, interestingly enough. Okay. Thank you for putting up with me. And Hare Krishna. Any comments or questions? Mahatmaji.
First of all, as Krishna says, Bhuktara Vipta Samsara Ko Mishna. Krishna is here, we are servant.
What's that?
Because of false ego.
What was that last bit?
We are to know Arvind Priti. Because of false ego, we are thinking of Arvind Priti.
Yes.
We are thinking of Krishna Priti. Then only we can enjoy.
Yes. Yep.
Like Prabhupada, one day, example is there. One devotee used to be near the door all the time when Prabhupada used to walk out. So two or three days, and third day he said, why don't you do some service? Why are you just paying obeisance?
That was Vishal in Vrindavan.
Yeah.
He'd say, Jai Prabhupada, Jai Prabhupada. And Prabhupada said, what are you going to do something useful? practical. Prabhupada said, what are you going to do something practical? I can tell you a story. In 1981, when I first went to India, I was on the veranda of the Lotus Building in Mayapur, and Harikesh, then Maharaj, and another sannyasi, I can't remember, a guru, they were walking around the veranda, and I was sitting there. I might have been chanting or was helping somebody do something. And every time they came around, I paid my obeisances. And then after about five times, Hare Krishna Maharaj came along and he said, will you stop doing that? So, yeah, do be practical. Be practical.
Cold shower after your hot shower.
You can try that too, yeah?
Yeah, I'll do that.
So I like... I think... Cold, not cold, but you know, room temperature's fine. That's cold enough.
It's actually really good for anti-depression also.
That's what the article says. It's good for depression.
I can vouch for that.
If you're feeling depressed, have a cold shower. When you get out, you'll be feeling, oh, well, that's great. Because, you know, you put that cold energy in, then all of a sudden you kind of, the body generates all of this heat. And this fellow's making a point that you also, it changes how you think. And so you'll start, you know, you'll think differently. Like we're in bed and we're sleeping, and, you know, we're kind of in this state of ignorance. Have a cold shower, or cool shower, shall we say, and it changes your consciousness. It's amazing, isn't it? You know, water Such a simple thing, but how purifying it is. It's a purifier. So you take a bath, and then it'll actually change the way you think. And so they say it's a cure for depression. One thing, only one thing, two things. All right, if you go to three, I'll stop you. Orchestrating and administrating everything that's going on here. We can't see it, but that's what's being said here. Right?
Yep.
A collection of senses? Not only, but primarily, yes. What's the symptom of a person? What's the symptom of a person? Yes, consciousness. What else? We're just talking about it. Senses. Huh? You got senses. The symptom of personality is your senses. And the senses is how you interact with everything. Even in the spiritual world. Huh? You've got a spiritual body. It's not all nothing or all one. Huh? There's senses. The senses of the devotees. We are sensual beings, right? Even in the spiritual world. And in fact, our material senses are a reflection of those we already have those spiritual senses, because that's who we are, but they're now being manifest through material energy. And it gets purified when we engage in devotional service, so that sensual activity, instead of being material activity, becomes spiritual activity, and our spiritual identity, our spiritual body manifests as a result of that. But that may not be the answer to your question. Keep going.
Yeah, so what I'm trying to say is, when we're saying about this body,
we're achintya bheda abheda tattva. We're not this body, but we're also the body. Right? If I come and punch you on the nose, which I wouldn't do, but say if I did, you'd feel it, right? Because you're simultaneously one with, but different from the body. Right? Unless you're at the platform of Raghunath Das, right? Then we still got to look after the body. Keep going. Yes, yeah.
Who are the gurus for?
The demigods too. The demigods are in charge of all of these things. They also do devotional service. The guru is considered to be the sum total of all of the demigods. Right? And what are the demigods? Who do the demigods serve ultimately? Krishna. Yeah, they're servants. So they facilitate our devotional service as well. They're happy to do that, I would imagine. Most of the time they're facilitating all of this material activity. They must be pretty depressed by that. Huh? What are these guys doing? Oh, no. All right, if you must. Huh? If you will. But if he's engaging in devotional service, hey, give him more facility. You would imagine, huh? What do you think? The demigods are devotees. That's why they've got these big responsible positions to facilitate everybody's activities. And see how detached they are? We're all doing stupid stuff and they let us do it. Waiting, like Krishna, for the day when we wake up to ourselves and realize, ooh, I'm not comfortable here, and I'm always being frustrated, but I want to be happy. How do I do that? And so then they send the devotees along. Hari Bol Prabhu, here's how you become happy. Huh? Yeah. If the demigods are facilitating material activities, they've got to be involved in facilitating devotional service. What? It's not, oh, devotional service, oh no, we don't get involved with that. Of course they do. They're happy to do that. Okay, I think we should finish here. I didn't know what I was going to talk about, but I managed to get a lot out in all of that time. You know, you should always experience some sort of stage fright before you speak. That's healthy. Gandhara Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Gaura Bhaktivinoda ki jai.